The pharmaceutical industry is a complex and fascinating field. It takes countless of people to bring a high-quality product to the market. In the Qualitox podcast, I bring to you leaders, experts, and innovators who will share their experiences and explain to us how they do it. Welcome to the Qualitox podcast. I'm Neil Kugler, your host, and my guest today is Alex Hall. Alex is a pharmaceutical consultant and a QP trainer. Today, our topic is quality risk management, a highly important topic that is unfortunately misunderstood by many pharmaceutical companies. Many take the reactive approach instead of the proactive one, and that can cost them a lot of money and risk customer lives. So we are going to explain how this can be changed and what the pharma industry can learn from other industries, like the financial one, for example. And I promise you, after this episode, you would happily go to the upper management and explain to them what needs to be changed and quickly. Alex, welcome back to the Qualitox podcast.
It's lovely to see you again, yeah.
You too. Our topic today is risk management, a very important topic, which I think doesn't get enough of attention, and the pharma industry can do better.
Most definitely. A lot of senior management are unaware of the regulatory requirements that we must do risk management, and also of the benefits from a money perspective, in that if we do it correctly, we will actually save ourselves an awful lot of money.
Yeah, so it's we're talking about money, we're talking about human life here, and I think in comparison to other industries, pharma really doesn't do enough. Although in other industries that do much more, they don't have as big impact on human life as pharma. So something really needs to be different. So let's start from the beginning. So the definition of risk is the combination of the probability that some harmful event happens and its severity in the basics. Do you have something to add to it?
Absolutely. And what I would like to add to that is the harm that we think about. We always think about harm to the patient and what can go wrong for our patients, but we need to also think about harm in terms of our compliance status. So are we in compliance with our regulatory dossier, in compliance with our good manufacturing practice? We also need to think about compliance with our business activities. So how much harm could we be getting from, say, we have a recall of a product, and that can lead to a lot of harm from our business in terms of profit, but also in terms of our business reputation. So I always, as a qualified person, put the patient first. We must not harm the patient. But these other factors will also come into play when we look at our quality risk management.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that it's something else that is done probably in other industries that is not done in pharma. For example, the crisis management readiness. That I think it's not happening in pharma, and it doesn't reach the highest ranking management.
I would like to very much pick up on that, Jan, because my history is working with companies who do have excellent business continuity planning in place. And now that we have the COVID-19 issue, you can really see the difference between those companies that have business continuity management and those that don't. And working with a company back in 2009, 2010, when the previous flu epidemic was in place, I was working with a company that had taken a lot of that planning on board. And we had systems in place where we could run at 50 or even 25% of our staff available. And the processes were already there. And we had what was called a fire drill, so that we actually went to the alternative site. We ran with different IT solutions. We had all the documentation available off-site that we would be able to use. So this is true risk management. It is a proactive approach where you plan for the worst case scenario and you put into place the things that you're going to have to do. If, for example, a global pandemic hits, how are you actually going to run your business without your key staff being at full capacity, without having access to your main building, without having your drivers all available because they're off with the flu? So these are absolutely things that companies should have in place. And I would say that many pharmaceutical companies are looking at the world through what we would say in English, rose-coloured spectacles. Oh, this will never happen. And that is the antithesis of quality risk management. We look at the worst case scenario and we design out things that could potentially go wrong, and we put in place things to manage what we can't design out. So this crisis that we're currently in is a really good example of, we hope it will never happen, but we make plans just in case. And we test those plans to ensure that they actually work.
Yeah. And do you think that's because the upper management is maybe not involved enough with the risk management in pharma?
Absolutely. Upper management have different priorities to those of us who spend our lives in the quality arena. So their priorities will be different. They'll be looking at different things. And when we look at our quality risk management as defined by ICHQ9, yes, I finally said it. ICHQ9 is our regulatory guideline on what we need to be doing for quality risk management. It's not a very long document, and it doesn't give us the detail of how to implement the tools that it recommends. What ICHQ9 does is tell us that as pharmaceutical manufacturers, we need a process in place and we need senior management to have governance of that process. As a consultant, what I find is that many companies I go into, because it's got the word quality at the front, we see the quality department struggling to implement this process from the bottom up, whereas it should absolutely be coming from the top down. Senior management should be, in my view, implementing this, championing this. There needs to be a risk management committee and governance process that is led at the very highest levels, and at least one senior board member on that committee who is the overarching sort of champion of that process.
And does it missing from the quality policy in most of the companies?
Some companies it will be in there, and other companies it is missing. Yes, I think.
And if it's there, they're still doing enough, or it's just there.
It's just there. It's just mentioned. We will do risk management, and then what they see as that risk management is actually the reactive risk assessment that's being done on a day-to-day basis. Things have already gone wrong, and then they're doing a risk assessment rather than what we said earlier, which is our true risk management, which is always a proactive activity.
Yeah. So, and I think it's very important that the upper management really takes the responsibility and are involved, because I find from the quality perspective that the quality department is usually the one that is responsible for the risk analysis, the risk management, but the upper management is not involved enough. And it's problematic because that way they cannot do any risk mitigation. They cannot prepare for the worst case scenarios from the business side. So they leave it for the quality, but it's not enough. So let's say we have a risk analysis of a process and there are critical points, and if something goes wrong, even if the chance is small, there is a risk to the patient. So I don't think that such results usually get to the upper management to consider what happens. And with a good risk management that goes up to the upper management, they should have also their own teams that look at those results and then do the business risk assessment that says, okay, what happens to our economical state if a patient gets hurt? What happens to the company? What happens to our financial state? What happens? What do we need to say to the stakeholders? So every scenario needs to be prepared, and it should be ABCD. If there should be a taxonomy, if this happens, we do this. When A happens, we do B. When B happens, we do C. There should be a chain of events, and everybody should be prepared for it, for the business sake and for the patient's sake.
Well, I think you've hit on a really important point here, which is the process is in place for our risk management strategy. We actually need two key connecting systems from what we're doing on the ground through to our senior management process. One of those is our management review process. So we have our risk register that is an output from our risk management activities. So we should have routine risk management activities, whether they are standalone risk management reviews of processes and systems that are already in place, or change control driven risk management activities that are from new product introduction or updates to process and procedures, introduction of new equipment. All of those should produce risks that are put onto the risk register. Okay. Or we can have what we would call an escalation process. Yeah. So the risk register is reviewed through the management review team. And that is senior management. Senior management should be at that table, and there should be no ifs, buts, or maybes. Senior management are accountable for what comes out of that meeting. So full visibility and full accountability. However, you quite rightly picked up that sometimes when you are doing these risk analyses, whether it is proactive or reactive, sometimes you get something that's really critical crop up. You can't wait for the management review process cycle to kick in. So that's where your escalation process kicks in. And you must have a procedure and a process that defines exactly what you're saying. We do set point A, point B, point C in this order. And a lot of people have what they call the recall committee. Now, your critical issue may not yet need to go to the recall committee, but what's the in-between levels? How do you raise an issue that might happen but hasn't happened yet? So you need that escalation process to be formal, to be documented, to be fully in place. So those, for me, are the two things that link your risk management activities to the senior managers. You've got the risk register going through the management review process, and you have your everyday risk assessment, risk management activities going through an escalation process.
Mm-hmm. So as you said, I think that the key point here is sometimes overconfidence that nothing would go wrong. And I think this is one of the reasons why the risk management is so unpopular, and people don't happily sit together and discuss it because of overconfidence, of conflict of interest, because of some biases in the department. So for example, the production manager would unhappily admit that they have problems, and they would unhappily submit themselves to changes. And that's why they're afraid to speak up and say, okay, we have the risk for that, and it may be bigger than we think. or they just so confident that it never happened that it would never happen again. So there are so many examples, or also, for example, I worked at Bayer in the Wuppertal, and everything is there really great from the safety point of view. But we can remember that years ago, a building blew up there. Okay, it was years ago and lessons were learned, but it happened. It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't, I think not that long ago there was another plant in Germany that also went up in flames. It was a year ago, maybe. I don't remember which company it was, but it happened. So things like this need to be taken into consideration from their risk and from the business point of view.
Absolutely. We need to be learning from our health and safety colleagues, because they are actually excellent at the risk management piece. They're recording near misses, which we don't do. Yeah. And they really do have a very good documentation process and escalation process that we can learn a lot from. One of the things that I would like to pick up on is the fact that in pharma, we have got so used to being firefighters. Yeah, it's almost in our blood now. We don't mind having issues and problems because we spend a lot of our time doing that. Some of us, our personalities are, we quite enjoy this. Yeah. You know,
I think that's the problem. I think that's because I remember we always sitting in the office, and as you said, it's personalities that like challenges.
Mm. Yeah, people like the challenge. They like the problem solving.
And they don't like routine. So if something happens, oh great, let's solve it. So maybe that's the problem.
Yeah. So that's an adrenaline rush, isn't it? You're a firefighter. Yeah. You're off to save the day.
Yeah. For people who mostly work with documents, I think it's a bit of an adrenaline rush.
Unfortunately, I've got bad news for those people, because what we need to be doing is we need to change that paradigm. We need a paradigm shift from firefighters to fire prevention officers. That's what we need to do. We need to be looking at our processes and saying what could go wrong and stop that happening in the first place. That is true quality assurance, and we are quality assurance professionals after all. I have another little bugbear that I'd like to share with you, Jan, and that is where we confuse our reactive risk assessment and impact assessment with our proactive risk management. So everything we've been talking about up to now is proactive risk management, yes?
Yeah.
We deal, as we said, our firefighting comes in place. So we have deviations, we have complaints, we have issues that arise. And as part of those, we look at the severity of those issues. And we call that risk management and risk assessment. It isn't really. There are two parts to everything that has already gone wrong, and we do need to think about that. One of those parts is the impact of what has gone wrong, and one of those is the potential risk of what could happen if that has gone wrong. And I have a little example that I use for this. So let's say that we have a vial of sterile medicinal products, and that vial has failed its sterility test. So we found some live organisms in that material, and we found the root cause of this. Let's say that some water from the ordinary water system got in there, and we definitely have contamination in that material. Now, that has not been certified and released to the public. So it's never going to get to a patient. It's never going to hurt anybody. That would, in many organisations, be considered low risk. And the deviation may even be classified as minor, which would then lead to a very limited investigation being done and a very low level corrective action being implemented. To me, that is incorrect. And that could lead to some very serious incidents in the future because we're not putting the effort in preventing it happening again. What we're doing is we're relying on what we already know is a statistically faulty sterility test to pick up the issue. Yeah, the sterility test will only pick up really intense gross contamination. So let's take that scenario. The impact of that sterility test failure, of our contamination of a sterile product, it hasn't got to a patient, so the impact is quite low. I agree with you completely. The compliance impact on that, well, the product is non-compliant. It does not meet its specification, so the impact on compliance is actually quite high. The impact on the production activities, the GMP, well, it hasn't met GMP, has it? We didn't intend to put contaminated water in there. So again, that's quite high. And the impact on the business, well, we've had to throw away a batch of product and we've had to make a new batch. So that's a sort of medium risk, I would suggest. You've had to spend more money than you wanted to. Now let's look at the potential risk for that scenario. So the potential risk is that if we hadn't actually found this contamination, which is always worst case scenario, when you're looking at risk, you always look at the worst case scenario. So none of our detection measures worked. That could have got to patients. And not just one patient, thousands of patients. And each of those patients could have had a different reaction, but some of them could theoretically have died. That's a very, very high risk. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the risk for our compliance. Okay, we've now got contaminated material that is outside of its specification on the market. That's pretty high, isn't it? We've got non-compliant to GMP on the market. That's high. Oh, and from a business perspective, we've killed some people. That is really not good for business, is it? So again, our risk is extremely high.
Yeah. So, and I think that's maybe the problem, that those evaluations stay within the quality.
Yes.
They don't go outside, and the upper management is doesn't even realize what could have just happened.
That's that near miss thing that I was saying about. Yeah.
But this one miss can send people to jail. It can bankrupt the company. Mm-hmm. And some plant managers would say, or quality managers would say, yeah, the chances are so low. It doesn't, why should we invest money in buying a better equipment to identify? Mm-hmm. Why should we change our water system to the state-of-the-art one and invest a few hundred thousand of a few million euros, but in comparison to the billions that a company can lose and the people that go to jail, is it's really minor.
Exactly.
So it's a great great example for that. Mm-hmm. And I think that also that's one reason why such situations where an almost miss happened don't reach the upper management, don't reach outside of the quality. It's something that needs to change. And here I think it also comes, I talked about it with you off camera before, the free lines of defense that many companies implement. And if something like this would be implemented in the pharma, it probably would help. So I can maybe give an overview to the people who are not familiar with their free lines of defense. So it is used in financial institutions and under businesses. And what it means, there is the first line of defense. Those are the people who are basically in the front lines. They're the ones that interact with the risk, with the process that may cause harm. So those are the people that need to be the ones that evaluate it. And it's should be their responsibility to do it and to take action. So it could be the manufacturing plant, it can be the quality control, it can be the quality assurance. So each department is the first lines of defense, and they should internally identify and evaluate their risks. Then we have the second line of defense, and in pharma it would probably be the quality assurance. So it's the department that helps, evaluates, gives support, and performs some internal audits. And this is something that for now we have the quality assurance department that usually do everything. They're the one who push departments to do risk analysis. They call the meetings and they oversee it. But it should be something internal. And the quality department should be the one that evaluates, helps, and support. And then we have the third line of defense. And this in the big companies would probably be the corporate audit department. It should be a corporate audit. There, it should be an independent auditor, independent department that reports to the CEO, reports to the upper management, and they need to review everything. So when you have such a chain of defenses, it is unlikely that you oversee something, because there is another department that pushes you a bit further and wants a bit more justifications. And I think if something like that would be implemented in the pharma, it first of all, it would take a bit of work from the quality, because the quality would have a bit of less headache to oversee every risk management process and every evaluation, and push everybody to the table and say, let's do it. But each department is responsible for their actions. So what do you think about it?
I think that's an excellent idea. And I think this is also part of where the QP comes in, because the QP tends to be independent of many of those functions. Yep. And what I'd like to see, certainly when I'm working for companies, is more use of that QP knowledge and experience and bringing things to the QP sooner, rather than, oh, here's a batch, you have to certify it straight away because it's late. Bringing us your questions earlier, what do you think about this, before it's late, so that we can give advice and provide that level of feedback that you're just talking about there, Jan.
So what should the change in the pharma companies, and who should initiate it? Who should raise... Who should ring the bell and say, okay, we must do it? So probably the upper management won't listen to this talk, because they're to this podcast. It's more the quality people. But who should raise...
I would absolutely love for the senior managers to be listening to podcasts like this, because actually they can make the difference. They are the movers and shakers in the organizations. And if our quality colleagues who are listening to us today could sort of aim this sort of thing at their managers, this would be really helpful.
Please share
as much as you can, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, because we all have a part to play. Remember, when you're first coming into quality and you are taught quality is everybody's responsibility, and yet how many people actually take that on board? How many people really walk the walk and talk the talk? So I would very much like to see everybody in an organisation taking this on board and saying, okay, I've got to the point now where I will point out when something's wrong. But let's get to the point where we can point out when something could go wrong, and you're listened to, it's recorded, it's evaluated, and we're doing this correctly. And it's actually supported fully by senior management. I'm not saying that every pharma company is bad at this. I have seen some pharma companies who are really, really good at this. So let's see where best practice is lying and copy them. Do what those guys are doing and do it really well. It will help enormously in morale, in production. Production actually goes up. We're more efficient, we're more effective. And of course, eventually, we end up making more money. Now, whether that money goes into shareholders' pockets or into research for more and better medicines is dependent upon the company. But it can only be a good thing if we are making medicines that are safe, effective, and good for our patients, can't it?
Yeah, so that's the reality that should be, and that's the reality that we should move towards it. And I think that for now, it's a bit difficult to do such great changes, especially in huge corporations. But I think people in quality should at least consider when they're doing the risk evaluations and when they see something that has a potential risk that is maybe it's the maybe the probability is low, but the risk is critical. Mm-hmm. So at least you say, okay, the chances that it happens because the detectability is really high, probability is low, but the risk is still really high. I think that at least those points should be forwarded to the upper management with some review and say, okay, it probably won't happen. But if it happens, this and this would happen. So think about the shareholders, think about the patients, and I think the upper management would thank you for that.
Absolutely.
And I hope so. If not, it's not really good management, because if you come to them in advance and say, think about that think about ways to mitigate, think about already prepared the press release. It should be on your table, because this, if it happens, it's like 1% of chance, but it could happen. You should be prepared. The company should be prepared, and they should be thankful for that.
Yeah. For senior managers, there's something called the red face test. What if this is on your national newspaper's front page? How would you answer the questions of the reporters? How would you feel if that was on your breakfast table in the morning? For the rest of us who are probably not going to be on the front page of the newspaper, there is such a thing as looking after your own interests. If you're not too worried about everything else, there's a three-letter acronym I have for you. It's called Cover Your Arse, CYA. Okay, because when you have raised those critical issues, at least you've told somebody else about it, and you don't then have senior managers saying, nobody told me, it's not my fault, it must be that person over there who knew about it but didn't raise it. So there's three letters for you, CYA.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Qualitox podcast. If you did, consider sharing it and make sure to subscribe, so you don't miss new episodes. Stay compliant and see you in the next one.